You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
There have been many books written about how the United States has become the country it is, covering our anthropological, cultural, and geographic history. But until now, no one has looked at our genetic history. In his latest book, DNA USA, A Genetic Portrait of America, Brian Sykes, professor of human genetics at Oxford University, tells us what we can learn about our nation by looking at the genetic diversity of our population and how the findings may change our perceptions of genealogy and race. It's published by Liveright, and I'm very pleased to welcome Brian Sykes back to our show. Hello.
Good morning.
You're British. Most of your previous work has been about European genetic histories. Was the United States the next logical step?
Well, it did strike me as being slightly impertinent for a British geneticist to look at the United States. But then I thought, well, heavens, you know, American and European scientists have been looking at other countries for many years and without worrying about it. So I thought I'd give it a stab.
Well, since European populations tend to be more homogeneous and the countries are a lot smaller, can you apply the same approach that you have in the past?
Well, you can, but actually there's a new technique which I use in DNA USA and which made America a really very interesting place to look at, because here you have the convergence of people from three quite different continental origins, starting, of course, with the Native Americans, and then people coming here in the last 500 years from Europe and from Africa. So a convergence of these three genetic types, if you like, that you can tell apart now using a new genetic test developed in America. And I employed that test in my research when I traveled around America, and it forms a large part of the book.
And in this country, we have people coming in from Asia now. We also have people coming in from Latin America. Are they the same genetically as the Native Americans?
They're very similar, yes. But I had to be, with such an enormous country, I had to be really focused on who I looked at. So I really looked at only, in any detail, European Americans, African Americans, and Native Americans.
And you did your study by traveling by train. Wouldn't driving have given you more access to the small towns as well as the big cities?
Well, I got off the trains, but I did think, I mean, I'd been to America before, but only to the coasts, east and west, and once in Chicago. So I really didn't have an idea of how big it was. I knew it was somewhere between the size of Britain and infinity, but where on that scale it lay, I didn't know. So I thought, well, get the train right across. So I did this research with my son, Richard, and my wife, Ulla, so a very small research team. And Richard and I, on the outward leg, traveled from Boston right across America to San Francisco.
And you went to Boston and you asked for volunteers whose relatives had arrived in the United States before 1700.
That's right. So, and I thought, well, I'm not going to find many of those. But in fact, thanks to the help from the New England Genealogy Society, I got hundreds of volunteers whose ancestors had been there that long. And the reason I wanted to look at those was that, I mean, geneticists can have a rather jaundiced view about people's behavior. I was absolutely sure that they must have intermixed, intermarried, interbred with the Native Americans. And I was looking for the evidence of that among the descendants of those early European settlers.
What'd you find?
Well, in fact, this is probably the most surprising, if perhaps the least colourful, of the results, in that I hardly found any at all. I hardly found any Native American DNA among those, the descendants of the early New England settlers. Only in one case, and this was a man, a very eminent genealogist, who knew he had a Mohawk ancestor 12 generations back. And in fact, I found that piece of DNA. And I also found out that it controlled his blood group. So he was delighted to see this sort of genetic evidence for what he'd always known.
So white New Englanders were almost exclusively European in their DNA. But most southern whites had at least some African DNA. Do you think that some KKK members might have been a bit upset by learning that?
Well, you know, it's true that all my volunteers from European Americans from the South did have some, sometimes quite a lot, of African ancestry, which they didn't know anything about. Now, my volunteers, on the whole, reacted perfectly favourably to this. They didn't. They were quite glad, really, to hear about this. But some of their relatives, who also must have had African DNA, were quite very shocked. And I wish I'd managed to sample DNA from a member of the KKK or any white supremacists, because if they came from the South, I would have found African DNA.
Does this tell us something about the way people of mixed race respond to the experience? You guess that the reason that you didn't find more Native American DNA in whites in New England is because they probably would have gone into the Native American group to live with them, whereas in the South it would have been preferable to pass as white.
That's right. I think that must be the explanation for the New England results, in that they I'm quite sure they did interbreed, and you see the evidence of European ancestry in Native Americans, but the offspring just didn't get back into the European communities.
My guess is Brian Sykes, his latest book, DNA USA, A Genetic Portrait of America. Before you describe the rest of your cross-country trip, could you give us a little bit of a background of the history of using DNA to chart human activity, starting with prehistoric discoveries? I don't want to spend too much time on it because we don't have a lot of time, but it's really important to understand how this whole science has developed, isn't it?
Yeah. It's. I suppose the last 20 years has seen the most of the developments, and DNA, particularly two strands of DNA, one inherited down the maternal line, one down the paternal line, the Y chromosome in the latter case, and mitochondrial DNA, as it's called, in the former, have been extremely useful in mapping large-scale population movements originating, as we all did, in Africa, then spreading out to Europe, to Asia, and eventually to America. So it's been extremely helpful.
And this is a new field being called genetic anthropology?
Yes, genetic anthropology. But what's happened in the last 10 years is that individuals have grasped and been embraced, in many cases, the ability of DNA to tell them about their own ancestry.
Well, how long does DNA last? You write that your first attempt to extract ancient human DNA was with Egyptian mummies. Did you find DNA
that
intact?
That was there. That the oldest one I've found is 12,000 years in a bone from a limestone cave. But even older specimens have yielded DNA up to 40, 50,000 years. Quite extraordinarily long-lived molecules, so long as the conditions of preservation are right.
And as long as someone hasn't touched the the object.
Yeah, you've got to be
modern DNA pops up first?
Oh, yes. And I don't think I ever did a sample where I didn't find my own DNA as well as the ancient material.
Even if you were wearing gloves and all?
Oh, yes.
Now, the human genome contains about 23,000 genes, but much of the early work was based on what you mentioned earlier, mitochondrial or mDNA. Why is that?
Because it was, well, first of all, it's more abundant in the cell. So in ancient samples, that's what you get out most easily. And then it has this wonderful genetics in that it's only inherited down the maternal line. So you can, you know, I got it from my mother, who got it from her mother, and so on. Only one individual, any one particular point. Same with the Y chromosome down the male line. Genealogists love the Y chromosome because it often goes along with surnames, so it's a great help. Say two people with the same surname, check their Y chromosomes, you can see if they're related or they're not. They're very simple, and it saved lots and lots of work.
Can we assume, if we were able to trace mDNA all the way back to the earliest time, that there was something like an Eve who
was the mother of
humans?
There was. You can. It's an inevitable logic that takes you back to one woman, and we think she lived about 150,000 years ago in Africa, and from her, we're all descendants down the maternal line.
So if that's the case, why has our genetic material become so varied?
Because in the case of maternal mitochondrial DNA, mutations have accumulated within that time, so that they occur about once every 10,000 years. So lots of mutations have occurred, and allows allows one to pinpoint the matches that you find.
With mDNA research, you've been able to group certain populations into clusters, which was the subject of one of your previous books, The Seven Daughters of Eve, in which you determined that all Europeans are descendants of only seven women?
That's right, yes. Almost all, about 97%.
And here you say that Native Americans fall into similar clusters. Three out of five of those clusters came from Northern Asia through the land bridge that we've always heard is the source of Native Americans. But then there are these other clusters. How are they different?
Two other clusters. But before we touch on that, I should say this is done by scientists without asking the Native Americans whether they agreed with this research, and it fundamentally differs from their own ideas about their creation.
Well, there are all sorts of different creation theories. The Hopi talk about coming up from the earth. I think most scientists would think that that was a nice metaphor.
Okay, but they didn't ask the Americans, the Native Americans, what the, and didn't get their consent. Most of the samples were taken for other reasons, and I think European American scientists didn't realize how insensitive they were proceeding. It's very different now, but it's meant that Native Americans, when I talked to them, I went to three reservations, Cheyenne, Hopi, and Navajo, talked to them about this, and that it's caused great offense, and I think it's going to be a long time to heal that rift and get them to or persuade them of the advantages of knowing something about the genetics. But anyway,
in fact, there was a fossil found in, if I remember, the Northwest, and scientists started looking into it and found all sorts of interesting things about it. But Native Americans were furious because they felt that by tradition, it just should have been theirs, and they should have been able to bury
it. This is Kennewick Man.
Yes.
And I talk about that in DNA USA. Yes, it caused a huge stink, and no DNA was recovered from that, of course. But you're talking about the different clans, three of them now taking a scientific look at the Native American origins. Three of them do come from Northeast Asia, Siberia. One comes from further south, and I think the ancestors of Native Americans on that group arrived by boat. But a fifth one...
You mean island hopping? Or
Around the coast of the Great Circle Route, Kamchatka, Alaska. But they didn't stop. They went down the coast of northwest coast of America until they got somewhere which was more pleasant to live in, Central America, California. Stop there. But I think there's a very interesting, a small component in Native American tribes from the Great Lakes region, which I think the most reasonable explanation is that they came directly from Europe about maybe 10,000 years ago, hopping around, well, going around the ice flows that covered most of the North Atlantic at that time.
Before Leif Erikson.
Oh, yes, way before that. But going around, it's not so difficult to go around the edge of an ice sheet.
But they don't look like Europeans.
Pardon?
But the Native Americans of the eastern part of the United States may not look much like the ones on the west, but they also don't look very much like Europeans.
Yes, but this is a long time ago, so they've then mingled with other Native American ancestors coming further west to produce their genetics and their physiques and all their other genome material now.
Now, we have been running the BBC's A History of the World in 100 Objects, and one of the objects is the Clovis arrow point, which was once considered an important marker in the history of Native Americans. Your genetic, the kind of genetic research that you're doing has made that superfluous?
Not really. I mean, I heard that program in England, and I was very eager to examine it, so I did go to the British Museum. And they were very kind, took it out of the case. I had it in my hands, a wonderful object, absolutely fantastic, beautifully made. And one of the objects found in association with hunter-gatherers. Nonetheless, there is a very vitriolic debate in amongst American anthropologists about whether this represents the artifacts of the first wave of settlement from Siberia or that actually it was rather later. I think the genetics points to the possibility or backs up the idea that there were earlier immigrations into America than the Clovis Point period.
And there have been other finds in, as far down as Argentina that predate Clovis.
Yes, there's a big site in Monteverde in Chile that certainly does.
My guest is Brian Sykes, who of Oxford University. His latest book, DNA USA, A Genetic Portrait of America, which is published by Liveright. You say that most Americans claim European ancestry and are at least confident enough to claim a specific origin of, on their census forms. Is there a need, then, to seek out a genetic history?
Well, certainly if you look at a map of America, you see that most on the census forms, the majority populations in each county will say their origin is Germany, often. That's the majority, in fact, or English or something. Well, that tells you one thing. It tells you that they still associate themselves as being with being German-Americans or English-Americans or French-Americans. So everyone in America that I've met is still very much aware of their, in the case of European Americans, of their European origins, and they often maintain those traditions, as you know.
Do they seek out their genetic history through testing?
Oh, they certainly do. I mean, that's one of the big things that's happened in genetic genealogy in the last 10 years, the university and I started a company called Oxford Ancestors, and a lot of our clients are Americans who are looking to find their genetic ancestors in parts of Britain.
And we've been getting a lot of calls from people who have interesting genetic stories about themselves. So it's obvious that this is becoming more popular for people to have themselves tested, but especially for Native, for African Americans, isn't it?
African Americans, I think, have benefited hugely. They tell me from the use of genetics, because it's enabled them to trace at least their maternal line, and that's a very important emotional line, back to the regions of Africa from where their ancestors came.
But your friend Dr. Rick Kittles, who runs African Ancestry, said that about a third of his black clients find that they have European genes, and many become very upset.
That's the male, on the male line. On the female line, then you could almost guarantee to have an African ancestor. Not so along the male lines, and as Rick says, about a third of them do have European males as their ancestors. And as is not uncommon amongst African Americans, they're not always pleased to know that they have so many European ancestors.
In other cases, genetic research has explained certain things. For example, when certain Mexicans were told that they carried the Y chromosome that indicated a Jewish heritage, suddenly strange rituals from their childhood started to make sense to them.
Yes, that's a quite extraordinary story. This is because their ancestors had been part of the Sephardic Jews that had been expelled from Spain. And if they'd remained in Spain, they were given the choice of conversion to Catholicism or not. They converted, but only they didn't really mean it. So they were always being quizzed by the Spanish Inquisition, thought they'd come to America to get away from it, but they didn't. So the Judaism, those practices, remained hidden, and then found out in the last few years, in some cases, that they did have a DNA that was very specifically associated with the Jewish male line and actually converted to Judaism as a result.
Which answers a caller's question. He wondered if there's such a thing as Jewish DNA. But I am curious about, you mentioned Sephardic Jews. Yes. There are also the Ashkenazic Jews. And they, at least on the, I don't know what their blood reveals, but if you just look at the two groups, they look quite different. The Ashkenazic Jews look like Northern Europeans. So do they have a very different kind of a bloodline?
They do. And one of the most surprising things when looking in the genetics of Ashkenazi Jews is, given that they were spread around a large area in Europe, they do have genetic similarities with each other. Whereas the Sephardic Jews are not, their genetic ancestry is not so different from parts of Spain from where they came. So they were more assimilated, I think, in the past. However, I mean, what I found interesting is that the that Ashkenazi Jews and Native Americans both have reason to be very suspicious of genetic testing. Ashkenazi Jews for obvious reasons of the Holocaust, Native Americans for reasons we've already covered. However, Ashkenazi Jews in this country have embraced genetics, and they've done a lot of it themselves, and it was spurred on particularly by the common occurrence of Tay-Sachs disease in that community.
And now we have these TV shows like Who Do You Think You Are in PBS's current series, Finding Your Roots. They've kind of glamorized the process, haven't they?
They take celebrities, usually, and I mean, I've had the opportunity to test celebrities in the past, but in DNA USA, I was more interested in speaking to, in Americans from all walks of life.
But you had yourself tested, and you found a big surprise in your own genome.
I did. I've got a little bit of Asian and a little bit of African in my genome. My African section actually controls my insulin genes, which are made by the pancreas. So I was always, it was always engaging and a way of breaking the ice to tell my African American volunteers that my pancreas was black.
You write that this type of research just shows how arbitrary categories of race and ethnicity can be. They're largely human made.
Entirely human made. Yes, they don't have a basis in there's no one to one correlation in biology, which DNA USA clearly demonstrates, and also clearly demonstrates that we all have DNA from loads of different ancestors, but the important thing is that DNA from wherever it came has got to work together. So if it doesn't, your African DNA or European DNA have to work together to make you work, otherwise you'd be dead.
If my total genome were laid out, mapped out, is it possible that it would look very much like somebody who looked very different from me as opposed to somebody who looked very much like me?
If it was exactly the same, they'd look exactly like you, probably. That would be
identical twins.
Yes, that's right. But, yes, it all depends which bits you've got. So, for example, it would be quite possible for somebody with almost the same, 99% the same DNA as you, but if their pigmentation genes were African origin, they'd have dark skin.
You describe this book as your last big job, the way bank robbers are said to look forward to just one final payoff before hanging up their weapons, because it was just such an overwhelming endeavor?
It did seem to be at the start. I didn't know how I was going to do it, and I modelled it, unlike other research projects where I've sort of tested thousands of people and had large research teams. This was much smaller, and I really modelled it on... I'd just seen Easy Rider, the film, and where you have Peter Fonda and his friends wandering aimlessly around the States. I thought I'd modelled it on that, and actually it worked out really well.
Well, the difference here is if you go to... parts of Europe, you can be pretty sure that there'll be exceptions, but that most of the people will have a lot of things in common. You go to Asia, there'll be mostly things in common. You come to the United States, where so many different people have come to live. In Queens alone, I think the most diverse part of the globe, Queens, New York, you have so much more variation.
And that makes it such a kaleidoscope. It's a paradise for people like me, geneticists.
Brian Sachs is a professor of human genetics at the University of Oxford, founder of Oxford Ancestors, and the author of The Seven Daughters of Eve and Saxons, Vikings, and Celts, or Celt, I guess it's Celts. His latest is DNA USA, A Genetic Portrait of America. It is published by Liveright. Thank you so much for being with us again.
My pleasure.